This is Joe, and you're listening to the O Gatekeeper podcast, where every week I'll be talking to my people about what gets them up in the morning, what their purpose is, and why they make things. Hopefully, it will inspire you to do the same. Thank you. You can get episodes early and without advertisements over at ogatekeeper.com, as well as weekly bonus episodes, playlists, and my Joe and Friends series. Enjoy. Okay, it's with great joy that I introduce this week's guest, who is a longtime hero of mine, inspiration, and incredible artist, Peaches. Fuck.
Yeah. Is that a studio? Your studio, your podcast studio?
This is my office that I just recently got built.
Wow.
Yeah. So
Cool.
I make music. I've got, music shit to the right of me here. And then a cupboard over there with music shit in it. And
Ah.
then a place here where I build forts with my daughter.
You what? You build what?
Forts, like castles and shit.
Oh.
The first time I saw you like a long, long time ago live, and then I saw you at Primavera maybe like 6 years ago.
In a tent,
So
like some tent thing, yeah.
yeah, like it was like in a venue under the bit by the harbour. Do you know that one? It was
Yeah.
like, and I was fucking scared. There was a giant penis coming towards my face at one point. It was unreal. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen. I loved it. We all watched it, and it was fucking
Cool,
incredible.
cool.
But there's some theatrics in your show.
In my show? Yeah, I'm all about that. Yeah, I'm all about like pranking you, surprising you. Yeah, making you feel like you're seeing like a huge Kiss concert, but it's just me.
Yeah, it was unreal. It was magic. There's lots of prosthetic boobs and real boobs. But if I remember
Yeah,
rightly.
all of it, all of it.
Yeah. Do you design all of that? Do you do it all yourself? Is it like all your...
Actually, no, it's all like it's pretty organic. It's funny. It just kind of happens. It started with, I mean, the ridiculousness started with those. It's like a football, like one of those. I don't know what you call it when you put it on, like.
Shoulder pads.
Yeah, exactly. Shoulder pads, the football shoulder pads. One of my dancers in Australia made it for me. She just had this vision of making like a boob shoulder pads with Barbie heads with punk haircuts, and
Have you still
and
got that?
what's that?
Have you still got
Oh yeah, and I keep everything. I have a whole archive in my basement here of all my
Wow.
costumes. Yeah, but what was amazing is that I worked with her once. She had this idea. She was going to be my dancer on a whole tour. I arrived in Australia and all my costumes got held up at, customs, not because they were, just because. And she's like, "Well, I made you this." And I was like,
Sick.
"What? Oh my God, this is, yeah." And it was instantly a favorite and perfect.
I don't think we focus on dress enough. I wore a cape for like half a tour and I
Yeah.
kept like tripping on it. It's like, fuck this shit.
Would you wear it like the whole time? Was there like any dramatic moments with the cape?
Like the James Brown thing where I
Yeah.
throw it
Yeah.
off. No, I just kept it on, and I'm not very cool with shit like that. I'm like, I become conscious of it. I'm not very like confident with my body, and I don't like to draw attention to it, even if it's like covering it. Do you know what I mean? It's just a weird thing where I just try my uniform, and then I don't have to think about anything, and then
It's
I'm
all
like,
here.
yeah, I'm just comfortable. Yes, it is all day. Yeah.
But you don't stand still on stage. You're not just like with a mic stand and.
No, but neither do you.
No, but I
You
mean, like, you're not really, you can't be that uncomfortable with your body because you're like on stage.
yeah, I think the armor is the music, if you know what I mean. I just
Yeah.
focus on the song.
Yeah. I mean,
Go.
I didn't grow up like playing dress up or wearing makeup or any of that. It just kind of evolved. Someone gave me a cape once. It was gloves that have a cape attached to it.
I
And then it
see.
just reminded me of like Kiss or Ozzy Osbourne or like you said, James Brown. And I just started playing with that, like wearing it or actually tripping over it and like spitting blood in it and like doing the thing like I can't go on, but just trying to like fuck with all those cape isms in this like machismo 70s rock kind of more way.
Sick. One thing I do like about that sort of thing, the idea of it, I'd like to do is like Devo, where like you all wear like it's a uniform and you'll feel like one thing I'd love to do is feel like we're a team. Do you know what I mean?
You and the whole band wearing a.
Yeah, but the thing about Devo is everyone kind of gets involved. It's a bit like the Rocky Horror Show, you know? Like it's like everyone kind of it's not just like they're the main act and everyone just, you know. But
Oh, you
I
mean
don't
like the
know.
audience will wear like those red Devo things, more like
Yeah.
that?
Yeah, and there's something enigmatic about their show, you know? It's not like it's quite the opposite of like hair metal and shit like that. It's more like
Right.
they're a team rather than a crew, you know.
Ah,
I don't
that's
know. I
cool.
don't know. I'd like to feel like we're
Are
more.
you did you are you like you love Devo for any other reasons?
I'm in love with Devo. I think that's
Yeah,
like.
they're amazing.
I think the reason why I love them is because there's a bit like they balance naivety without it being fucking just comedy. There's like a naivety, but there's a ferocity in it. It's like. Everyone's like, yeah, I believe in that shit. There's like real art to it without being pretentious and like a bit like the monks, you know? They had this like fucking manifesto and everyone just goes with it because the music's fucking great. You know, it has to be good, otherwise it's just boring. But like it was.
Yeah, I only knew the monks as like audio recordings. I don't really know what they look like or how they presented themselves.
They met a guy, an artist, who gave them a manifesto. And it was to be like, I can't remember, it was like to be cool at all times, like crazy 60s shit.
Okay.
But they all shaved a monk's haircut. So they had
I
like
didn't
literal
know that.
bald patches here. And they wore the robes and like the
Wait,
gowns.
there's two monks though, aren't there? Two monks.
Oh,
There's
maybe.
like monks that used to be in, they used to be all in the army.
Them.
I think I know different monks, the ones who are like drugs in my pocket.
I
Do you
don't
know
know
those
that one.
monks?
No, I'm gonna write this down.
They're like drugs in my pocket, and I don't know what to do with them. They kind of sound like Devo.
Does, drugs in my pocket. I'm gonna look that up. Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. I always think it's a tall tale, a tall task, sorry, to balance costume and theatrics. I think you've got to have the punch behind it, I just. I haven't got that, but you have, which I'm very impressed by.
Thank you.
So Berlin, why Berlin? Do you what makes you love it so?
Well, I'm not in love with it right now, actually. I'm not in love anywhere right now. But
Okay, yeah.
Berlin has a special sort of self-righteousness that is not serving it in terms of how they should be presenting themselves in the world, and it pisses me off, especially being a Jewish person here. And if I can get right into it, just how they equate, if you're not with Israel, you're an anti-Semite, you're a self-hating Jew. So basically here I'm a self-hating Jew and in jeopardy of having privileges where of self-expression. So
I was very
Which was
surprised.
the exact opposite reason why I moved to Germany or Berlin, because Berlin was like, I moved in 2000, so I've been here 25 years. And I moved here because it was like cheap, open, the wall had opened up like 10 years earlier than that. So there were all these spaces. It turns out now, obviously, they're like everywhere. How to give it to artists so that it can be gentrified and then we can make it boring and expensive. But, the city was broke for so long that artists really had a run of it, like a huge run of it in terms of making spaces, like doing concerts in like the like Parliament buildings, because they're just like empty and stuff like that.
There was a huge squat community, right? Kreuzberg and places like that was just like rife with squats and kind of anarchism.
Everywhere. I had a studio space, well, studio, just like a big room that I think I paid like 150 euros for this huge room that I had 24-hour access to in this building called Tacheles. And I called it like the Disney of squats, because just tourists would come in constantly looking around because it was open all the time. But
Wait, was that the big, is that the huge one that was
yeah,
like
in
big
Mitte.
people? Yeah, I think I visited there.
Yeah, there was just always spaces and weird spaces and like weird stories about it. Like Tacheles, it started as it was a Jewish department store in the 1900s, and then it got bombed, and then it became a prisoner of war camp, and then it became a recreation sort of meeting center for the East, and then it was a squat. So it's like crazy history all the time.
Yeah, I recently did some like emergency recording for a project we're doing whilst touring. So we were in Prague for 4 days. So we got a studio space, rented one, and it was like in an old, it was first a Pentecostal church. It's fucking huge. Pentecostal church, then Nazi headquarters. Then the post office of the people, communist post office, and then just the general post office. And I was like, wow, that's crazy history. And he's like, yeah, it was a post office until like 2 years ago. I was like, what the fuck?
And
Like,
now who needs post office?
it's fucking Jeff Bezos will sort you out. That actually, can I start? So, and that's just a transition. I don't want to make it too unnatural, but the whole point of this podcast is that if I can find some of the people, you're a hero of mine, and I'm not just making that
That's
up.
so
I think you're
nice. Thank you.
fucking incredible. I think
Oh,
you're a
thank you.
powerhouse. I think you're a beautiful artist. And I learned things like you recorded certain songs live, and then I listened back to it. I'm like, how? And I think you're a force of nature, and I'm really grateful that you're doing this with me. I
Thank
didn't
you so
think you
much.
would, so thank you.
Why didn't you think I would? What is that about?
I think because I have incredible underlying self-doubt. I just
Aren't we
think,
all? It's crazy, huh? It's crazy.
and it's not nothing, no projections into you. I had no like. I just assume that people have got better things to do. But this is really about me opening up the world to people like my friends back home. Some of them, not all of them, or like my grandmother, who secretly played piano, even though there's a piano. Like she, my dad bought her a stand-up electric Yamaha maybe 8 years before she passed away, and she did these beautiful pictures and paintings. I bring it up a lot in my podcast because it's like a good example of people that are inspired to make stuff themselves for themselves in a cupboard of amazement, and they have this thing that keeps them vibrant and healthy and gives them a purpose. And I think creativity is a purpose. And I think as soon as I woke up one day with the idea that I could make a song, I was getting up every day with more fucking purpose than any day when I was 12 or 10 or falling in love or anything. Suddenly I found this connection to the universe. And I think a lot of the podcasts, especially with men, is about this is how you do it. This is how you get to be a millionaire or get healthy. And I'm like, I'm not interested in the how. I don't think it matters how I do it or how you do it. because we have very different ways of doing it, and neither of us are probably seemingly dogmatic. It's just we have our own way, and that's great. But we're lucky enough to have found that, whether we found it or we worked our ass off, you know. But I'd love to know why these people that I love do the things they do. And it's more about showing a little mirror up to the world of why we're here doing what we do. And I've kind of devised a few questions that help get along the way.
All right.
Maybe, although I never really get very far. First question is, how much of your upbringing remains in your creative language?
That's a very interesting question because I think that sort of I'm creative. I don't want to say despite my upbringing, but I didn't really have a very nurturing, creative upbringing. Not that it's just like, okay, well, let's not go to therapy or anything, but I think that my dad actually on my from I think with my dad, he was always, he's like, oh, I should have been a singer. And he was actually a semi-pro baseball player that stopped after his mom died, and then he just was like, I'm gonna get a real job. But he was always really excited when I would do creative things. So I don't even know if this is really a question, but so I felt encouraged that way, but we weren't really like a creative family, or it wasn't like we would develop that together. So I don't know how much. But there's got to be. There's no way you can't. But that's a strange question for me. Because I think it was just the love of whatever, whatever music was in the background, like on the radio and stuff, that sort of like seeped into my brain. And that's what I would focus on. Like, maybe I was five and I would be already memorizing songs and things like that. Just, but I wouldn't be memorizing homework or anything. It was just so the environment, what I was taking in was just music. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm answering your question at all.
You
But
are, I think so.
also like growing up, I was never, I would try to get into creative things, but I would always be kind of shut down. Like I'd go to, I would go, I'm gonna be part of a play. And then they'd look at me and go like, you're gonna be a ghost. Come on and go boo and leave. And that and I was like, well, that's not what I thought performing was. I thought you get to like develop, I don't know if you know this about me, but I taught kids drama and music for 10 years. And I think that really, that creativity was so inspired by my childhood because I was always told, okay, we're in recorder class, play this note. Oh, you didn't play it perfect. You don't get a solo. Sing this. Or, so it was always about performance, performance, perfection. Do you have it or not? Instead of like progression. So I think what my takeaway is about like trying out things and progressing, not like dress up perfect and say a perfect line. So I don't know. That's my answer to your question that wasn't your question.
Well, it magically is for me. I see some parallels, and one of the things that I always had is that I never got the part, you know? So like I
Yeah.
never really. I was obsessed with music. I'd always have headphones on. I was like the kid with the headphones on. And that's the only time I got in trouble was like, take your phone. I'm not taking my phone off. I'm not doing any. My mom was just like, just let him have headphones on. He's not doing any harm. Anyway, but like, I never saw creativity or like being allowed into that circle as a thing that would ever happen. So because I went, the first time I did it, the only time I was in a play, I got one line. And like, I really loved basketball because it was a sport that I could be creative in, the way you pass, and I just found this like channel in it. And my like most a lot of PE teachers, my PE teacher was a fucking oaf of a prick. prick, and you know, just didn't like my personality, so they didn't let me in the team. Maybe I wasn't good enough, but everyone was like, you know, at an age where I played it more than most, and it kind of that just knocked the wind out of me. And that Mr. Caffrey, if you're watching, go fuck yourself,
Fuck
man.
you, Mr.
Sting.
Caffrey. Fuck you, Mr. Miracle. I could sing.
Yeah, fuck you, Mr. Miracle. And it's that thing, it knocks the wind out of you, and you're like, oh, well, it's just not for me. I'm not good enough. That meritocracy of creativity is fucking cancer. It's the opposite of what it is, which is you connecting, finding something in the world that makes you feel connected to people, to the fucking trees, whatever you decide. And I think that like curriculum version of it disallows us all to feel what we should do, which is ourselves.
Yeah, they don't, school doesn't teach you creativity. Creativity to them is the same way that they'll teach math or science or, you know. But whenever I would find a teacher that had some sort of creativity, I would excel all of a sudden. Like I remember Mrs. Burns, she was like this sixth grade teacher, and she would have us do these amazing projects. Like she's like, make a sculpt. Sure. And the sculpture is supposed to speak for itself, and then you give a little speech about your sculpture, and that will tell you about whatever you're talking about. Or we would have to do like just all these. It was so creative. It wasn't like, and then all of a sudden I was excited about stuff. Like she became a huge influence in my psyche, because it was like, wow, that to me was learning, you know.
And definitely part of your upbringing, you know. I
Yeah.
think that, like, we because the noise you can hear is my father actually. He was a huge voice. He's an artist. Is an art sculptor, and he's putting some pictures up for me today. He's the
Oh, wow.
DIY. He's the DIY guy for me.
Amazing.
Anyway, but like, I didn't have many teachers. I don't think you're supposed to really. It's like, you know, it's a lottery of people you can find, the personalities. But when you do find a teacher that inspires you, mine was an English teacher, Mr. Dudding. Hello. He's not, none of these fuckers are watching. Anyway, Mr. Dudding, and he was an English teacher. And he got me into reading.
That's
And
cool.
for someone with no attention span, like the idea
Right.
that a teacher could have got me into reading is insane now as an adult.
Yeah.
How the fuck? It was just because they allow you to channel something that's just magic. I think it's really cool. When was the first time that you felt like you found a connection to to something, you know, like you started to find how or who you are through creative language? How are you speaking your own language for the first time?
I wanted to be a theater director. And there was a program in my high school where they, like every other subject, you know, you go through the year. But in theater, we had a black box, like a proper black box. And they would just give us assignments, you know. And it was just so creative, like to do whatever you wanted to do. And, they split up the year in three. So at the end of the year, at the last term, because they had 3 semesters, they would split people up in groups of actor, producer, director. And I was so to me, it was like also maybe like I wasn't really interested in being the actor or the producer. I wanted to be the director, like see the whole picture and do everything. And I was just all of it was, it gave me a purpose. It really gave me a purpose. I wanted to do that. I don't think my particular play in the end was very cool. I don't know why I thought it was being cool picking like a Sartre, a Jean-Paul Sartre play, which has nothing to do with being, it didn't make any sense.
I mean, the selection is cool. Jean-Paul Sartre, when you
Yeah, and
hear
it
it,
was
it's
like a
cool.
closet theater too. It's like one of those ones that you're not supposed to perform. It's like just a, so I don't know what I was thinking, but I remember a funny thing that you know, this was the time where Saturday Night Live had just come out, and I was obsessed with Gilda Radner. I don't know if that name means anything to you, but they were in the beginning cast, and I used to like imitate everything she did, And I remember my theater teacher took me aside once and he's like, cut the Jewish shit. And I was like, oh my God.
Jesus, God.
Because I guess I was too loud or too fun or too, like ADHD or blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But I really, that gave me a focus. And I don't even know if it was theater, but it just seemed like something creative. Like there was also music at my school, but I learning an instrument seemed like something you needed to know how to do already. And or that you like I just didn't understand that being a musician didn't entail like a bunch of theory and schooling and things like that.
That was the
So
thing that put me off for so long.
yeah. And so I went to university to be a theater director. And I won't I first thing I said is I'm gonna make cool musicals. Like I was like, yeah, not and like Rocky Horror Picture Show, but like make it wild and crazy, but mean shit and political. And people were like, we're doing Shakespeare. Like it just, people just looked down on me. They didn't understand at all. Like, so I didn't last very long in that program. But then I found music and realized that you could do everything. You could envision the world, the set, the lighting, the lyrics, the writing, the performance. And that was like, wow, I can get everything I want, and it can all come from themes I want, not like an old or a new script that I didn't write or anything like that. So it was kind of it was a development that just went by time.
I love the way that kind of that early idea of the political Rocky show, and you being rejected in a sense of, that early stage is exactly what I witnessed in Barcelona,
Yeah.
Isn't that fucking cool?
Just like, I'm not take no prisoners.
That's magic. Yeah, I know. I think that correlation between education systems and what it seems like a lot of what you, how you see, whether it is or not, obviously I'm not here to say, but it seems like a lot of what who you are is a sense of defiance from the education system, from lack of creative flow in the household or whatever that is. But like there's a lot of defiance, and it's obviously there's a lot of defiance in your music politically and seemingly, just talking about Berlin and what it's become, and also the fucking world.
Yeah, I think. Oh, sorry. You were probably going somewhere with that.
No. My thing is, how much do you think defiance is a key part of your creative language? Is that
I think that I'm very what's the right? I'm very amazed and shock and awe on how incongruent the standard of humanity is represented, and it makes me angry. And I want to set a world where I think there is an inclusion and a joy. And I think that it starts with our own bodies, and there's so much to say about our own bodies and bodily autonomy and sexuality and gender and all in the real effort of becoming who you need to be. That is it. Become who you need to be. And that there is a fight from other people to stop people from becoming who they need to be is the basis of all I do. When I made my last album, which was 10 years ago,
Was it 10 years ago? Okay.
I love that reaction that people are like, really, 10 years?
It's just
I,
scary, isn't it?
yeah,
10 years or so.
and I remember at the beginning of the press cycle, Trump was in was Trump? No. Obama was in office, and people were like, "Do you really feel like this album, what you do, it seems like everybody's, it's just kind of everything kind of swung the way you said it would or is doing, and do you really feel like it's important to make this kind of album?" And I'm like, "Fuck yeah, let's celebrate it and continue it." And then a year later, Trump came into office, and everyone's like, "This album's more relevant than ever." You're just like, "Yeah." And now it's just, gone off the rails.
Really has. I think, like, is it one of the things about the relevance of body autonomy? There's a beautiful phrase. It's like, I've got a 6-year-old daughter, and like, one of the earliest practices that I read in a book that I thought was fucking gold was that as a father, when you are play fighting, she says stop, you immediately stop, even if it's tickling or whatever. And like, to some people, that's a bit dramatic. And I'm like, well, and the book explains it really well. It's like, she's going to grow up to know that when they say stop, you fucking stop. As a respect, I don't need to stop. She's tiny, but that's the point. That's the autonomy. And like, I'm in this really weird place in my life. Again, let's not make this therapy, but well, I just really am not happy in my own body at all. I don't like looking at myself naked. I don't like being my body. I'm not happy with it at the moment. And that's not necessarily just to do with image. It's to do with, just, I don't know, like a joy thing. And like, I have to be really careful around my kid when I do have her, because I don't want that to come out. I'm always honest in my sadness or fatigue or like fucking frustration. I'm never angry at her or with her or around her, but I do get frustrated and I explain why. The honesty thing. And I think that empowers her. But what I don't want is for her to see me not love who I am. And it's like, and I think that's the thing that I also try and put in my art, is like, loving yourself is the, like you say, your body is the first thing. It's the first fucking thing.
It's what we have, it's our instrument.
And then these people that get to own it ideologically, for instance, abortion laws, is the extremity of that. But even just what we wear or smile, just smile. You're like, fucking no. But I understand the power of it, and I really appreciate your work, and I really want to say thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
But that's, yeah, I think, would you say, in an act of defiance, do you, well, you're, and I don't mean this in a transactional way, but like, your worth as an artist, would you say that you, what is your worth in the world, beyond the defiance and give liberating people and making them feel joy? Do you think, do you get what you want? Do you, or do you feel like you're, when I ask people normally what their worth is, I leave it at that, but I think like we've gone beyond that point. And it's like, but there is a sense of like what your worth means through defiance in the world. Beyond your audience as well, just who Peaches is,
What is my worth in the world?
as Peaches, not as a person.
I, but not to an audience.
Well, no, including your audience, but not just your audience, like, because some people will hate your music. And
That is important too. Now I'm going to go on a tangent again.
great.
I feel like something that's really important that gives my worth, that gives it back and forth, is the actual live show, in terms of like, it can't happen anywhere else. It just can happen here. And this is a moment. This is a moment. I'm standing on you. You're holding me up with your hands. We are in the audience. If you drop me, I am a person. I will fall flat on my face. There will be nothing going on. But here together we are doing something. It's that feeling of the end of just to that, that we're doing it, that we want to be together, that we're not divided, that it's like this is together. But I don't think that's what you mean. I think that something very interesting about peaches is that people have, and I'm sure that this happens with, you know, idols, whatever. It's like people's interpretation of what you do is not necessarily what you thought, but it goes beyond and it becomes something. And it's sort of like your song or your presence is like almost like just a seed of it. But where people take it is so interesting and so amazing for them, what they feel with it or the hatred they have with for it. It's really, it's amazing that you create something and it goes beyond and it goes in all these different directions for people. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if somebody comes to you and they're like, you know, oh, I love that song. Like, this is what it means to me. And, you know, I thought about the history of Ireland or, you know, or England or wherever, you know, and they go on. You're like, I fucking never thought of any of that shit. But wow, that's what connects to you. And that what sparked something in your creativity or your defiance, you know?
With that in mind, were you ever sentimental about? You don't seem sentimental, but like, were you ever sentimental? But like, was there a time when you were precious about the reading of your work? Like, I think early on, it was, I was a bit.
I think early on, I really realized I was more defiant than early on in my work. There was such a public, like a excitement and a disdain. So I could feel that on stage if I was playing maybe opening for someone or I was playing in a club and nobody expected me. You could see people having revelations in their eyes like, whoa, this is like, I think I'm queer or something, you know, like a, like having these moments and then other people being like, this is what is this? Is this music? Is this is I don't know what this is, but not leaving, just kind of standing there like. Or wanting to like fold their arms and be like, stare me down, you know? And that gave me a really a power to disarm that, like to go up to that person and be like, your arms are folded, you know? And like try to like find the way to like metaphorically have people open their arms or like, this is why I love humor so much. Because if you're talking about something seriously, but you put a humorous, if they don't believe what you're saying or they're not interested, they're like, but if you say something humorous or do something self-deprecating or you know, they kind of relax. And then, oh, and then the rest is allowed to get into their body. So that's very important to me.
Yeah. And then you move to Berlin. That's a very defiant act, and you're
well, I kind
using
of moved to
humor
Berlin.
As a disarmament. You know, that's great.
They don't understand humor here.
No.
But you know, it was very. I moved here very early on. It for doing Peaches stuff. Yeah, but somehow it was like a zeitgeist of them understanding the like freedom of sexuality and expression, and along with the electronic music, because. You know, more than them understanding like the Cramps in that way, you know what I mean? Who are like my, like if I could be like the Cramps, then I've made it, you know, things like that, or understanding it in the rock and roll way. But it was very, very rock and roll to me, what I was doing.
Yeah. And me. All right. Can I just be rude and look at my phone?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure there was two more things, if that's okay.
Yeah, we listened to, you know what, I just made a new album, me and my partner, Elson. I think you met once at your concert, but I don't know if you remember. Because, you know, Mark was my tour manager.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Elson was on tour and stuff. But, yeah, we listened to a lot because, especially obviously your lyrics are fucking amazing, and the way you
Thank you.
but also the way you use drums. It's
Well,
really
I'm,
cool.
I mean,
You'll hear, you're gonna hear on the new album, there's a lot of live drums, which is new for me, which is very much Ellison's influence. And also love the, like, it's really cool. Thank you for this, Little Sims, Chemical Brother, Peaches. It's very cool song. Very, very
Thank
cool
you.
approach. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, you drums wise, because I don't want to take it away from John. I write most of the drums, and I rip you off all the time. So there you go,
Oh,
in a loving way.
cool.
But you can't sue for drums, so I'm
You
joking.
can't what? Sue for
You
drum.
can't sue. You
Yeah.
can't sue unless I say I've stolen it, which I just did. So,
And that, oh,
but.
and this is taped. All right. I don't
Cut.
really know what there is to rip me off in drums in terms of, like,
What?
you just try to be more minimal with it.
No, there's a pocket. I think because there's honestly, I've learned this is like everyone has a relationship, especially with drums and vocals. There's a pocket, like Mike Skinner from the Streets. Like he just has a pocket, and it's kind of awkward. But as soon as you hear it, it's him. And like, I just don't think you can. I just think you have a really great energy with drums. And I think I don't try and steal it in that way, but I like it's that like there's a velocity to your work that you no one can replace. It's just the way it is. Yeah. So there's
Wait,
one
I
more
wanted
I
to ask
picked
you,
out.
like, are you, do you love Marky Smith too?
Yeah, I do. I like. There's a lot about The Fall that I love. I'm not gonna like geek out on albums or anything, but like just his the thing that annoys me about Marky Smith is that you can't rip him off. Cause you're like it's just like he's so like weird. It's not a pocket. Like obviously, you know, the post-punk thing musically, but lyrically it's just that's he's just does this Marky Smith thing. And I think you have to be unhinged and be as broken as he was to do what he did to make it authentic. I've seen loads of people do Marky Smith terribly, you know, and it, like, it's just, but the music, you know, it's definitely something that has inspired me. But I do like, I'm glad I never met him, put it that way, because I was also a very gnarly alcoholic, and had a better right hook, I expect.
Wow. Okay.
I just don't like rude people. I don't like mean people. And I had a lot of stories about
Yeah.
them being mean. And I just think as an artist, it's great, and I could just stay away from it. I know, like people I know that work with him said he's amazing, but I'd like to go out drinking with him.
Right.
And I'm not a very good drinker. But what about you? Do you like, did you meet him?
He has a big relationship with Berlin, and people have
Right.
worked with him. Yeah, not really. Yeah, no, I never, I've been near him, but you can't, there's no, like, person that you can get into that
Okay.
I could, connect with. So.
We actually, I just remember we supported them once in Bristol, and they were still on stage, and he left and went backstage, and our bassist Deb was walking down the corridor and saw him sat on it, and he was like, "Oh, I just want to say," and he went, "Fuck off," like, on the mic, and Deb was like,
Oh,
"Oh,
sad.
good."
Yeah.
So, yeah, but yeah, I like the music. I think, but you're right that he's got it's a different thing with him though. Like he's there's like a pocket, but I think it's just more like you could have just given him a stick and shout and
He would
hit,
just
just be
go.
himself and it
Yeah,
would be
exactly.
that thing. If you is there anyone that you that's a big part of your creative makeup that you've like stolen from slash been inspired by?
Makeup?
Like your the makeup of who you are,
Oh, the makeup, not like makeup, the makeup of who I am. Well, I mean, I, you know, Iggy Pop, there is something about that energy that really Iggy Pop and Lux Interior, those energies, like I have to climb something, I have to be moving, I have to be going. Wendy Williams, you know. I used to watch those, you
Wendy
know.
Williams, I don't know.
Yeah. Do you know, yeah, Plasmatics.
Okay, I don't know
You
that. I'm
know
going to
them?
put them in my phone.
So she used to go on talk shows, and you know how you do the like song. She would like chainsaw TV sets on stage. Or she did this legendary show. I think it was in New Jersey where they're playing. It's all like punk and everything. She gets into a car and they put a bomb in it and she's driving it. And then she jumps out of the car and the car keeps driving into the ocean and blows up like shit like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Was that like late 80s or something then?
That's it is 80s. Yeah.
It sounds like, it's like the Gang of Four were doing that thing where he's like hitting a microwave with a baseball bat.
Oh, I know. I saw them do that like 10 years ago, and you're like, nobody really cares about this microwave right now.
No one cares about microwaves anymore, right?
Don't, it's just so cool. I saw that when I was like, I don't know how old, but I was like, she's so cool. And Nina Hagen.
I know Nina Hagen. She's a
Nina Hagen, look her up. She had like a 7-octave range, but she'd sing like
oh, sick.
crazy shit. You know what
Cool.
you should, you can, the good thing is that like watch a live version of her singing Ziggy Stardust, the
Okay.
Ziggy. And her, you can just see her eyes pop out of her head, and also the makeup, and she's just, she was an East German woman that broke out.
Not many German artists, is there?
There were, it was funny because in the 80s it was a thing,
Oh
you
yeah,
know,
of course, yeah.
and now there isn't. But yeah, it all went to like, not that you like these artists, but it all went to like this French thing, you know. I was thinking about it, like all the electronic, all that French hard electro stuff,
Like Ed Banger Records
Ed
kind of
Banger and all
thing.
that. Yeah,
Yeah, it's mad.
have you seen the Gustavo Stein show?
I haven't seen the show.
Just look at images. It's insane.
I fucking love the music.
Oh, the music is like just like blows your head off. I got to see, I played a festival, a very small one. It was with Gustavo Stein and Kraftwerk. And I had this, and I had like, I was like, please, 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 I want to. I got to, you know, how they have those two tiers where they do the lighting. So I got to sit up there. The Gustavo Stein, it's like he's got these two crazy crystals. His whole face is latexed black, but his eyes light up every once in a while. And he just does these like super, it's like he's a super villain. It's pretty wild.
That's super villain music, right, isn't
Yeah.
it?
And the
Yeah.
image is very super villain too.
Cool.
Yeah.
As we were just talking about performance and the weight of it and theatrics and how I was in, we were touring with LCD Sound System and they were kind enough to lend us their studio to do like some backing vocals on one of the songs. We did it for
Amazing.
us.
Yeah.
And they were super sick. So we were hanging out in what's his studios called? DFA Records. So we're in DFA studio in New York. And then he was like, oh, we were talking about sped up and slowed down songs that sound good. Like there's this whole Chipmunks album where they slow it down and it just sounds like Danzig and shit. But it's unbelievable. It's so
Wow.
good. It's punk songs covered by the Chipmunks. And they've slowed the whole album down and it's so good. There's one track
Wow.
that's mind-blowingly good. And then I was saying how there's a sped up Bruce Springsteen I'm on Fire that sounds like Dolly Parton, but like haunting. It's so good. It's so good. And then another one was his. So James was like, "This is fucking so incredible." And he told us about it. I was like, "Oh, it sounds okay." So he played it, and it blew my mind. And it's a 45-minute slowed down version of "Wuthering Heights" by Kate Bush.
Okay, that's my shit. I want to hear that.
So you watch it, and obviously it's 45 minutes of a 4-minute song. So every frame is like, and the music slowed down with it. I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
It's the video.
It's the video of Wuthering Heights slowed down
The
for 45
official video.
minutes. And honestly, you realize how fucking there is no one better at performing than Kate Bush. Every frame, she's like, every fucking digit on her hands is
There.
just this purpose. She does
You know,
it. Yeah.
when my family got a VCR, the first thing I recorded was the Kate Bush live at Hammersmith. Is it Hammersmith? I get the two. There's one in New York that's Hammerstein and Hammersmith. I think it's Hammersmith Ballroom or something. And it's like the first time, you know, because she spent 3 years learning how to dance once she got her album. She was like, I'm not going to
No way.
perform. I'm going to learn how to dance so that I can perform. And this really shaped my performance a lot. Like, just she does things that are so wrong that only she can do. You know what I mean? Like it's like the wind is blowing and she's just going like, you know, but just Kate Bush. I grew up with Kate Bush, you know, like new albums coming, you know, like I love The Kick Inside. I got it for my maybe 15th birthday or so, and then it was like The Dreaming, you know. I was like, wow. And then Hounds of Love, you know, which is what most people heard for the first time. But I was like, I feel so lucky that I grew up in real time with these albums. That's my
Yeah.
karaoke jam,
Which one?
Wuthering Heights.
That's fucking tough.
It's my secret weapon.
Do you
I
know
pull it
what?
out. I just pull it out and people are like, "What?"
I'm gonna steal that from you. What is your karaoke song? Wuthering Heights. That's fucking how what's your range like then?
Pretty high.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do a performance where I sing the whole Jesus Christ Superstar myself.
No way.
Yeah.
Sick.
Just with a piano. So I have to do like the white man metal and the soul voice and the like Mary vulnerability and yeah.
Well, next time I'm in Berlin, I'll buy you a bottle of 1942 and we can swap
Okay.
song. We can swap
Let's do it.
songs.
Yeah. We can do karaoke in my studio.
Sick. Sick.
Are you
Not
coming?
in
Are you going to
mine.
play in Berlin?
I hope so. Like
Yeah.
we best show we've done in Europe, hands down, I think, outside of like Primavera Festival stuff, was Berlin. It was mind blowing. I got one more question for you, if that's all
Right.
right. Is that okay? What is your
Uh-oh.
death row dinner?
My death row dinner, like the last dinner I want to have.
You
To be.
just couple of caveats or rules, but not rules. It's $40 limit, so you can
To
have
be
it up to.
honest, I
Go on.
just want to have a bunch of different amazing stinky cheeses. Like, soft cheese, hard cheese, but all just like stinky and meat. I just want to eat a bunch of cheese because I'm going to feel so gross after that. I'm going to want to die. So I'm going to be so happy with all the flavors, but I'm going to want to die. So it's perfect.
That's the most tactical and beautiful way to end your death row dinner. That's amazing. Everyone else has been quite homely, and you're like, "Oh, okay, loads of do you like stinky cheeses, or are you literally being defiant till the end?"
Love them. I
Okay,
love
good,
them.
good, good, good. Me
I just
too.
want to eat them. I just eat too much of them, and then I'm like, "Why did I do that?" And this time, I don't have to say it because it's like, "Who cares?"
Yeah, sick. You know, there's amphetamines in stinky cheeses.
Really?
Yeah, that's why it's quite Moorish and you get like a buzz. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
It's my
What's your
drug.
favorite stinky cheese?
I don't have a favorite. I don't like it when it's too like butt. buddy, like butt stinky cheese, but I like really salty crystalline cheese, like that kind. Or like, yeah.
There's I think my favorite in that, it's not stinky actually, but I've just discovered like really old Gouda or Gouda. How do you say it?
That's stinky. Yeah, I know it is Gouda, but then if you
Oh,
say that in
Gouda.
North America, they'll make fun of you like Gouda.
Yeah, but North Americans manage to mispronounce every French word, so
But you know what English people mispronounce?
loads of stuff because we're very
ILDO. How do you say that?
LIDO, Lido,
Nice one. I always hear English
Lido.
people going Lido.
Oh, Lido. Oh, maybe I say Lido as well. Lido.
But it's like a.
Well, do you know why? Lido d'Iesolo. My dad's best mate lives in Lido d'Iesolo, so
There
I
you
probably
go.
just say Lido because it's that.
Nice.
But that's the right way, Lido.
Lido, yeah, because it's a Italian.
It is Italian. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Fuck the English. Okay.
Fuck us
Right. Well,
all.
yeah. Well,
Yeah.
so I mean, this is it. Thank you very much,
Yeah.
and good luck. I hope that we'll come out of this World War III shit better off.
Woo. Woo. Yeah.
Stinky cheeses all around.
Stinky cheese and 1942.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Well, lots of love. Thank you very much for doing
You
this. I
too.
really appreciate your time and your honesty.
Oh, thank you. It was a
Yeah.
pleasure.
Thank
Okay.
you. All right. Lots of love.
Bye.